letting your body come to rest in a posture, whether seated or lying down, that is supportive, kind, and simultaneously dignified. That conveys a quality of alertness and presence. And sometimes this is simply about the energy or the intention that you bring into the body . And sometimes it involves slight adjustments in posture. Perhaps a lengthening through the spine, or a relaxing through the shoulders. A softening through the hands. Drawing your awareness into the body with each breath so that you can feel more fully the body present here. Touch points between the body and the floor, the body and the chair. Places where one part of the body is in contact with another. As you come to inhabit the body more fully in this moment with your awareness, noticing how it is with the body. Tuning in to places that might be tender or tense. Parts of the body that might be restful and relaxed. Maybe becoming aware of energy levels, the body tired or wired. Meeting the body just as it is. With a quality of welcome as best you're able. The body's like this, just like this. And then bringing the warm spotlight of your awareness to noticing the quality of mind. As if you could step up to the riverbank of the mind, watching the thought stream flow by. Perhaps it's a tiny trickle of thoughts, or maybe a raging river of ideas in this moment. And as best you can, not getting swept away downstream in the contents of your thoughts, not getting tangled up in the storyline, but seeing if it's possible to stay on the riverbank and really noticing the energy of the mind, agitated or calm. Cloudy or clear. As best you can, welcoming the mind just as it is in this moment. Oh, the mind's like this. Just like this. And then bringing the warm spotlight of your awareness to the heart center, to the emotional realm. Really checking in with what's here. Maybe there's some distinct feelings arising, frustration and irritation, sense of sadness or confusion, maybe gratitude or calm. Not needing to create anything and not needing to push anything away, but welcoming the heart just as it is. Oh, the heart's like this, just like this. even having taken care to arrive in this way, to kindly check in with the body and the mind and the heart, gathering your awareness to whatever anchor feels most supportive for you in your practice in this moment. It might be a felt sense of the breath. Resting your awareness wherever the breath is most easefully felt and followed. Or it might be resting your awareness on a felt sense of the hands or the soles of the feet, but finding a home base, a place to gather your awareness when it scatters, when it is pulled towards sounds or thoughts or feelings, to have a place to rest your attention in the body, a place to really rest the mind. And our practice is not simply about finding an anchor and trying to glue our attention there so it sticks. Rather, it's having this home base to rest in, and then watching the habits of mind and heart unfold moment by moment, noticing when attention wanders, noticing when a judgment arises or a feeling emerges. And noticing how we relate to these experiences when they show up. And then coming back to the anchor, the breath, or a felt sense of hands or feet, and resting again, even if it's just for half a breath before something else pulls our attention. We're growing this capacity for seeing clearly what's happening. And how we relate to it. And this capacity to direct our attention back home again and again. just noticing where's the mind right now. We're not trying to stop the movement of the mind, but cultivating the capacity to watch the mind with friendly curiosity. The mind's like this, just like this. And gifting the mind a place to rest, an anchor to come home to. Letting the mind come back to a felt sense of breath, or hands, or feet. And as we come to the last few minutes of this practice today. Pausing to reflect, how might this capacity that you're cultivating to watch and know the habits of your own mind and heart, how might this be of benefit to our world? How might this be a source of safety or support or kindness to others you might encounter? As you move through the world and the rest of your day, may this capacity to pause, to slow down, to see clearly and through the eyes of more kindness, may this be of benefit to our own hearts and to the hearts of others. May all beings know the gift of safety. May all beings know the blessing of peace and ease of well-being. May all beings be free from suffering. May it be so. So, it's delightful to be with each of you, and as I noted at the beginning, I thought I would do one more class related to, or one more day related to this theme around the precepts. We've been unpacking these guidelines for living a life of, ethical conduct or wise, kind action in the world. And, there were the five precepts. We looked at four of them in detail. They're typically taught in terms of restraint, what we're not doing. So the classic teaching is not harming, not stealing, refraining from sexual misconduct, not lying, and refraining or not using intoxicants. And we unpacked them using that framework, that really beautiful framework of Thich Nhat Hanh's, where he really speaks to them in the affirmative sense of what are we cultivating? So we sort of acknowledged the restraint and then looked at the path of cultivation. And I thought I would add one more piece into the mix that guides us around cultivation, particularly around communication, which I think is one of the places there can be a lot of suffering for many of us. Some of our trickiest, stickiest places are around our communications with ourselves and with other humans. So there's one more arena of teaching that is really helpful. It's part of, in classic Buddhist teachings, it comes from something called the Eightfold Path, which is another roadmap for living a life of integrity, really, and for finding more peace and freedom and ease and less suffering. And there's actually one step in that Eightfold Path that's called wise speech. And wise speech also offers some guidelines that are really helpful around our communication. And they are in the affirmative as well. They offer us some questions that we can reflect on. Often when this teaching is given, there are five questions that we are invited to look at that help us consider whether to speak and what to speak. So it's nice to actually have some tangible guidelines. You know, the precepts in many ways can feel aspirational, like those compass bearings for heart and mind. But I really appreciate this teaching because it actually has five concrete reflections that can be so helpful in offering us guideposts. So I want to share the questions and just a few brief thoughts on each, and then we'll have a chance to potentially share in small groups around these questions as a roadmap for practice. And circling back to that Buddhist saying that I shared at the beginning, right before our meditation, that in meditation, watch your mind. In public, watch your speech. So this is our practice off the cushion, watching our speech. And so these five questions are to consider when we're about to speak are, is it true? Is it timely? Is it nourishing? Is it beneficial? And do I have an attitude of goodwill as I'm about to speak this? So, to unpack each of these a little more, is it true? So this is an interesting complement. You know, the precept, the fourth precept, is not lying. And it's often actually easier to know when we're about to lie than to know that we're going to speak the truth. Like, the truth is more complicated territory often. And more complicated in that often what we're speaking are opinions, preferences, interpretations, ideas, hopes, expectations. You know, there's like a lot that comes out of our hearts and minds. And it might be true from our vantage point, but maybe not from all vantage points. So sometimes this question of, is it true, is about situating what we're going to say. You know, it's about just naming clearly, you know, in my experience, this, you know, this is what I know, or I believe, or from what I've heard, you know, it's not like, oh, do we have to, you know, have all the data to back it up? But sometimes what helps communication go more smoothly is the honesty of, I'm actually sharing with you my belief, or I have faith in this perspective. You know, there's many ways of saying that, but sometimes it's really the honesty of situating what we're about to speak. So there's a context, so whoever's receiving it can hear it, you know, clearly. And in these times of very heated and very divisive perspectives, you know, to come to the table and to just sort of own the vantage point from which we're speaking. So that's the first question. Is it true? The second one, is it timely? Sometimes something could be true, you know, and it's totally the wrong time to say it. You know, and we have all fallen in that deep pull when we say something and you're like, ooh, you know, whatever it is, your partner, your housemate, your, you know, comes home from a long day at work and they are really exhausted and grumpy, and you might have something important and true to say, and that just lands flat, you know. So, considering, is it timely? Might there be a better time? Can be so helpful. Sometimes this reflection around time might be, oh, I need to give it a little more time, or I need to gift some time to the other person to get clear about where they are. You know, if you've ever had a fight with someone, I was reflecting just a week or so ago, like, I was exhausted, I'd had a really long day of work, I was probably hungry, and like, some little thing set me off, and it was like, I was just so irritated with my partner, and it was like, probably what I need to do is like step back and give this a little time to percolate inside of me and to make a request for communication. Like, can we talk about this sometime later today? You know? So is it timely? Really helpful to pause, to sometimes slow down, and to widen the view, so it's not just about, is it the right time for me, but is it the right time for the other person or people involved in this communication? The third question of, is it nourishing? I like this framing of it. This comes from Gil Fronsdale, one of my teachers. It can also be framed as, is it kind? Is it supportive? Is it gentle? Is it heartwarming? Is it soothing? Is it caring? You know, it's this flavor in some way. It's like your version of the opposite of harsh speech. You know, we all know what that edge feels like in speech. And this is considering, is it nourishing in some way to say this? And this goes, again, we've had this theme, and we looked at this around the precept, too, of practicing internally and externally. This is a really good one to ask about internal speech. You know, is this kind? Is it nourishing? Is it gentle? Is it soothing? Because we're often really harsh with our speech to ourselves. And a lot of times that's one of the both the benefits and at times one of the painful elements of practice, because we often don't recognize how harsh we are in our self-speech until we meditate. You know, meditation practice, I remember this. I thought, I don't really have a very mean inner critic. And the more I practiced, the more I was like, oh, the quieter the mind got, the more I could hear the voices inside. What are those tracks playing in the mind? And are there ways to soften the edges on some of that harshness? And to catch the subtleties, you know? Sometimes it's, you know, it's that chatter is so much part of the fabric of what we've carried around for so long. And so our practice actually offers this opportunity for more freedom when we can hear what's really there and start to transform it. So is it nourishing? And then the question of, is it beneficial? You know, these questions really go together because sometimes, like, you know, out of the five questions, three or four might really line up, and then one key question doesn't. You know, it's like it might be true. It might be a good time. Maybe it's nourishing. But, like, is it beneficial? And one of the ways of thinking about this question of is it beneficial is, does it have a purpose? Like, is this in any way onward leading? You know, are we just speaking to hear ourselves speak? Are we speaking to unload something? And purpose is a really interesting reflection because, you know, and kind of the colloquial way of saying this is, you know, what's the purpose in me saying this right now? And there's often many purposes, and it can be a really rich reflection. Sometimes we say things because, and it can be related to the simplest things, you know. I was thinking about this in written form. I had to fill out this form, and they asked a question, simple question about a retreat I'm going to sit later this fall, and it was like, what's your meditation history? And I started to type something, and I was like, well, they're kind of asking for that, but maybe part of why I'm framing it this way in this moment is, like, I want to sound really experienced. Oh, so there's, like, actually a little ego in this answer that I was giving, and it was such an interesting reflection on wise speech to recognize that. And I actually erased what I said, and I said it in a different way that I was like, it actually, that's extraneous, you know? And so sometimes we say things to be helpful. Sometimes we say things because we want to appear knowledgeable, you know? You know, and things just pop out. Anybody, you know, people can ask something like, oh, have you read that book or have you heard of this person? And how often do you sometimes find coming out of your mouth, oh, yeah, I think I know about that. And some voice in the head might be going, you have no idea who they're talking about. But some part of you didn't want to appear like you're clueless. So wise speech actually could be this very rich and nuanced exploration through these questions, not to immobilize you, but to just get to know. It's another way of getting to know the habits of mind and heart. Like, oh, I have a tendency, whatever it might be, to appear to be the good one, the kind one, the knowledgeable one, whatever it is. And that's often conveyed in our speech. And it's not bad, but when we know those habits, we can actually speak in ways that are more authentic and actually facilitate more connection with others. And knowing if something is beneficial, beneficial also, one other thing I'll say, doesn't necessarily mean that it's always nice or pretty or, you know, Hallmark card communication. You can have beneficial communication that's strong, assertive, even fierce, like a fierce truth. And I think of that in these times when there's a lot of suffering in the world. There's a lot of injustice. And so you can actually convey a message that is true and timely and nourishing and very strong. So I think that's important to know, you know, to speak. Is it beneficial? It might be beneficial to speak very strongly. It might be beneficial for the well-being of the world. So that's an important ingredient. And then this last one, do I have goodwill? Can I speak with metta or kindness in my heart? So if you can speak that clear, strong statement, and it's coming from a kind place rather than it's coming from a sense of ill will or harm, you know, an intention to harm, then that's really wholesome. You know, so it's speaking with a heart and mind that has kindness. You know, I remember a story, Sharon Salzberg, she's one of the foremost teachers on kindness. And she tells a story of being in Asia and going to see her teacher and kind of getting attacked on the way. Like somebody tried to grab her handbag and she had been practicing all this kindness and she was trying to be kind and not. And so when she got to her teacher, she was kind of discombobulated. And he's like, what happened? And she told him. And she's like, I was trying to be kind. And he was just like, you know, she's like, what should I have done? And he was like, you should have hit him over the head with your umbrella with kindness in your heart. So it's like the fierce no, but the kindness here. It's like there is this permission, even in Buddhist teaching, which we associate with kindness, to actually stand up for yourself but to do it with an intention of like protection. I'm doing this so I can be safe, not because I wish to harm this human, but you know, it's the both and. So we can use our speech, our communication internally and externally, really as this way of cultivating more wisdom about our habits of mind and heart, and more compassion, and to really use it as a pathway to building bridges with other people, and even to building bridges with our own selves, our own hearts. So I will pause and offer a chance for you to have a little time in breakout groups to share with one another. And Karen, are you still immersed in noise? Oh, you can participate. Okay, good. So that helps me just know the numbers of how many groups. Oh, good. I am so happy. So we'll put you in breakout groups. Take about 5 or 6 minutes and just share. You know, how do these questions resonate for you? Maybe there's one or more that really speak to you, and enjoy each other's good company. I am going to just for a moment. So welcome back, and so you might just play with this week, you know, when in meditation, watch your mind, when in public, watch your speech and see what you discover, and to really honor that this is a long, deep, really lifelong practice to refine our speech. And we get to watch it all because all our habits and mind and heart follow us into any territory that we bring our practice to. And so these are all doorways really into the same territory of, you know, cultivating more freedom from suffering. So take such good care. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will look forward to seeing you next week with a new series, a new theme that we'll see. I have a couple of contenders, and it was just so sweet to be back, and sure. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, really, like in the guided practice today, the idea is not to stop the activity of the mind, but to cultivate watching it. So you watch the mind, you, which is why it can often be so helpful to have an anchor. So you land the mind somewhere, and that gives you a starting point to just start to notice, where does the mind go? Oh, it goes to this particular thought pattern quite frequently, or, oh, it's really interested in sounds, or in discomfort in the body, or, you know, So this is a big question you're asking, actually. It's a good one. You know, coming back to the anchor is a good place. It builds that muscle of being able to direct your attention And it's not about, you know, whether it's good or bad for the mind to be there. The mind just wanders. It's what the mind does. And there's a lot of complexity, my guess is, packed into your question that I don't know that I have time to unpack today. But I'll hold it and bring it back again so that we can look at it. Maybe I'll... Yeah. Well, maybe I'll consider weaving that into part of the theme, and maybe we'll just do a session at some point that's just questions about practice too. Yeah. All right. Take good care. Okay. Bye. Mhm. Take care. Bye.